Hello and welcome to the PK Soccer Youth Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Kelshaw. In today's episode, I am joined by Jess Ibrom. Jess is a UEFA and USSF A-licensed coach and technical director for the Samoa Football Federation. In today's episode, we talk about Jess's introduction into coaching in England and the US. We also talk about his various coaching positions in New Zealand, the Cook Islands and Samoa, especially his current role as International Technical Director. Hi, Jess. Thank you for joining me today. First, if you could give us a brief introduction of how you first got involved in coaching.
Yeah, no worries, Paul. Again, really appreciative of the opportunity today. I'm going to have to go back here to probably the year 1999. Which I guess was a special year for Manchester United fans. But that's when I sort of went into voluntary coaching, really, just a local club back in England, and done that for a period of time, done my level one. And then all by chance, I got the opportunity to go out to the US, and I went out in the year 2000. That was actually through Boonak camps. So I just stayed predominantly in one camp in the Pennsylvania region. But then really football journey kickstarted in 2001. And that was actually through Neil Castle. And yeah, I went out to Maine initially. It was Connecticut was my first camp. And I remember it very well in the year 2001 because I lost my voice week one. And I actually had another coach who I was delivering the practical, but he was actually delivering it verbally. And I was, delivering it just the other coaching way. So that was an interesting experience in week one. But yeah, that really was from there. It sort of kickstarted my whole journey. Obviously played back in England and, you know,
did Boonak, I'm assuming that was just not just a football camp. It was just a general camp. And then I'm sure then you probably weren't even familiar that there were like football specific camps, and then you get there. Am I right?
Yeah, no, it's probably completely right. It was all different activities. Obviously, I tried to do football as much as possible, but then about halfway through that summer, people were talking about there is like these specific companies that will fly coaches out from the UK, such as MLS camps, Challenger. And things like that. So I was like, wow, if there's specific companies that will actually bring you out, I was, you know, definitely determined the following year, 2001, to just go out with a specific football company. And it, you know, obviously happened to be MLS camps then.
So it was because of MLS camps that we really connected. And with you listening to the episodes with former MLS camps coaches, so I think it is a good story, and I'm sure we're going to get onto to your current position, but that somebody started as a volunteer and then an entry-level coaching position in the US working with mixed ability kids. And I've mentioned this on several occasions, I'm a big believer that if you can, whatever level of the game you work with, if you can work on a camp, a summer camp, and you can swim in that situation and not sink, then it really sets you up for really anything that coaching football and soccer can throw at you. So you did you just stay in the New England area when you worked for MLS camps?
Yeah, I mean, I'd done like two PDO roles in Gorham and Wyndham, which were sort of really close, about 10-15 kilometers away. To Maine mostly, and I'd done a couple of positions as well, Gorham High School, North Yarmouth Academy, which is obviously in Maine as well, the girls program there. Camp-wise, it was mostly throughout the northeastern region, so it was Vermont, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, you know, upstate New York, Connecticut. But a lot of my work was, Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire. And Maine actually became quite a go-to place year on year for me. I don't know what it was. I think I think it was the area manager at the time was, I think his name was Richard Padmore. And he, and there was another guy around that time, sort of Dean Brooks. And they just kept bringing me back to that region. So I must have been doing a half decent job, I guess.
And then one other thing as well, working for MLS camps, is that you, there are, it's not just coaching. There are somewhat organizational things where it's, let's say, trying to book a camp, or they were heavy on you planning your sessions, or even the idea of presenting to clubs in some idea. Were you ever involved in anything like that?
Yeah.
Or just purely doing the camps?
No, I was thrown into it very quickly. I remember my year one, actually, and you do sort of, obviously, parent coach clinics. I remember doing one in Wyndham, Maine, and, it's great because the parents turn up en masse, but, you know, we're not talking 10, we're talking, 60 parents, and you want to, they're asking you to run a clinic, and show examples of, activities within a training session. So, yeah, very quickly, you're thrown into it. It was the best experience for me at an early stage, because you, like you've mentioned before, you're just thrown into so many different uncomfortable situations, and you just have to get on with it. And for me, I mean, I tell coaches that all the time, it's the best way to learn, I guess, when you're starting out in coaching. So yeah, done a lot of those coach clinics, parent clinics, all varied number of
the reason methods. I ask is just trying to get an idea of like your first introduction of not just necessarily being a coach, but being a director and those dealing with those off the field positions or jobs that need to be done within football and soccer. So from your time with MLS, you then went back to England to continue coaching, and was that full time?
Yeah, well, no, not initially. It wasn't full time. So I'd got to a point the back end of 2004, because I'd done it the early 2000s. And I quickly realized that if I wanted to make a career in the game, I really wanted to go back to England to educate myself and just gain as much experience, because I was only going over, the usual 9 months at a time, come back to England. So it wasn't really stable in that full time regard. So yeah, went back to England and actually went to a semi-professional club, King's Lynn Football Club, but play in the National League now. And again, just started out as a volunteer coach. So just threw myself into it. And then quickly it snowballed from there. And I ended up being the actual sort of development officer for the whole program. And it grew quite quickly. So I spent the best part of around about 5-6 years in that program then, before then going abroad again.
So would that be then similar to like a football in the community position, like going into schools and like an outreach program?
Yeah. Yeah. So initially that was my role, was like an area manager. I had about 15 schools underneath me, and after school clubs, home, lunchtime clubs and player development centers, that sort of thing. And then when I moved into the role as football development officer, then it was, we had like a, I guess, more of an advanced arm where we had like teams from under 8s to 16s. We play lots of other clubs within the region. And then you'd have, like you mentioned, the community arm where you'd have just tons of schools, coaches going into schools, football festivals. So I guess it was more like a director of football role. Yes, along those.
Yeah, well, it's... Again, for anyone listening, there are, I've doing the school sessions and those outreach programs, although it's mixed ability coaching, even coaching in the US as well, it can be obviously different, basically different walks of life, but it's a way, it's a foot in the door. It's a rung on the coaching ladder, and it's a path into full-time coaching position. I think it's also worthwhile for anyone listening that you've got to think of other ways in within the game that you can make revenue or turn this into if you wish to turn this into a full-time position, you got to. And plus, I'm also a big believer that there's only so many times you can run around on the field. Even as a coach, there's a time where you got to, you know, those director positions, those management positions, it's something that somebody really should aspire to do if they would like to continue being involved in the game if they have had a limited playing experience. So how from there, what was then your reason for moving to New Zealand?
Well, I actually just got the itch again, and, you know, MLS camps was brilliant. It gave me an incredible foundation, and you know, just gained so many coaching hours along the way. But probably the back end of 2010, early 2011, I wanted to go abroad again. So I was going for roles everywhere globally, not just New Zealand. That was all by chance in the end. But probably for the best part of 2 years, I applied for roles globally. And then within the space of 2 weeks, I got two roles offered. One was actually in Vancouver. And I didn't know too much about it, but I decided New Zealand because they were attached to quite a well-known professional club. So I thought, no, I'm gonna take that opportunity. And that's how it all became about, really.
But did you also do some coaching in Mexico?
Yeah, so when I initially went to New Zealand for a period of time, and then, I'd been established in New Zealand for a while, and then 2013, I spent probably about 8 months in Mexico, running clinics and clinics around on behalf of a club, at Houston Dynamo, actually. And then I was just running sessions all over. Monterrey, Monclova, down south, Playa del Carmen, Cancun, the usual spots. That was an incredible experience. And I've been out there so many times, you know, just recently, actually.
So then when you were in New Zealand, you had several positions, right, working with different clubs before. What your main position that, how many clubs would you say, or how many different jobs did you take before you got like a full-time director's position?
When I initially went out to New Zealand 2011, I was brought in as a high performance coach with an elite academy in the South Island, and I worked there full-time for about 2.5 years. We traveled quite a lot within the region of Oceania and South America, scouting and recruiting players, actually. And then, so that was full time. And then I moved into my role as academy director, Wellington Phoenix in the Australian A League. And then Tasman United. And then I went to Cook Islands, technical director for 2 years. And then I came back to New Zealand. I was head coach for a National League franchise, Tasman United. And alongside that, doing some coach education work with New Zealand football. And so a few varying roles, but we're really full-time. Other than New Zealand football, one that was just sort of ad hoc, really.
So then what was your reason then wanting to really be involved in international football then with the Cook Islands?
Again, by chance, really. Someone I was recommended for the TD role, and I just thought, you know, my wife is a Kiwi, and I thought, what's the worst that can happen? We leave New Zealand for a period of time. We have an experience in a different country. It's a very small country. Population, 17,000 people. Island is about 32 kilometers in circumference, and made up of a few different islands. So I thought, let's just give it a go. And it was a challenge. So I seemed to find myself going into roles that are very challenging, big potential, but you've got to get your hands dirty, you know. There's a lot of work involved in it as well. So, yeah, we spent 2 years there.
So what would have been the Cook Islands' main objective when you were hired as technical director?
Really, it was development of the younger age groups. So we developed some national academies. We had about six national younger teams. Because that was a big, you have been on a small place like that, you could bring the kids in within, you know, no time and just run sessions 3-4 times a week. You probably couldn't do that in a, you know, some bigger countries. So yeah, no, it was just development of their younger players as much as possible, which I hadn't done as much of previously.
And were you, when you said you had to get your hands dirty, were you on the field running sessions as well?
Yeah. So in the daytime, in the office early, and then doing all the administrative stuff that you do related to the role. And then it would be out. I would be working with the teams with the staff on the ground, or I would be going around the island looking at all the domestic games from grassroots all the way up to the senior level.
I was going to ask, so they had a domestic league?
Yeah, it was actually a well-structured administered league. So they had seven National League teams at senior level. They had under eights, nines, under 11s, under 14s, under 17s, and then seniors. So it's very comprehensive, and lots of activity for the kids, which is brilliant. So I would be out Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, every night watching games. And that was the cool thing, because you're on the island, you can go 5 kilometers that way and watch a whole bunch of games, and you go 3 kilometers that way and watch a whole bunch of games. You just get around each village.
So from there, you're now working with high level players for that region. You then went back to New Zealand then to do a similar role, but with a club.
Yeah. So my role was mostly as head coach for a National League team, Tasman United. So it was a 6 month season, summer league. But you're playing teams from within the region. So you're flying around the country playing Auckland City or other teams. And then again, they had an academy arm to it. And then COVID obviously hit. I left the role. And then Samoa came about then.
But then while you were in New Zealand, you'd been involved like on an adult education side as well. Were you involved like with instructing their coaching licenses?
Yeah, so I would actively go out and support the league coach educators, just really for professional development wise, and for me to be around experienced coach educators delivering licenses in New Zealand, which was
you'd reached out to those instructors and really asked to shadow and offer assistance.
Yeah, I reached out to the national body, and New Zealand's a very small place. It's a village, really, even though it's 5 million people in the size of the UK. And you can have a coffee with anyone. So it was an opportunity for me to connect with some people and, just gain as much experience as I could in that area as well.
So from there, then you got your current position then as technical director of Samoa, but then you were hired during COVID?
It was just before. So it was 2019. Yeah, mid-2019. So it was really before it hit and came out. Yeah.
So how did the position come available, and how were you put forward for this position?
Yeah, I mean, you do hear at different points there's member associations in this region that they need technical directors because the turnover is so high. Really someone recommended, but I was reaching out to the member associations that didn't have technical directors at the time anyway. And it wasn't just Samoa, there was other ones as well. So I was already reaching out to them to say, look, I'm available and, seeking a technical director role if you're interested. And then it just sort of developed from there.
And were there any similarities to the Cook Island position? Again, working with like a small island nation?
Yeah, I mean, we're slightly bigger in terms of population. Probably got upwards of 200,000, two main islands. Again, rugby is the main sport, but participation wise, football is much bigger than any other sport on the island. But there's big similarities in terms of the challenges of you know, going into international tournaments, because they're just not together enough. You know, the national teams are not together enough. Coach education is an area that, you know, across the board in each business region really needs developing and enhancing as much as possible. So, yeah, really my job is just to sit across all the different divisions of technical football development, competitions, grassroots, youth football, women's football, and just try and drive it upwards as much as possible.
And are you involved with the, like, the men's national team?
Yeah, so as a TD, obviously the TD doesn't actively coach the national teams. I've just basically I almost oversee and make sure the structure's right, make sure the personnel is right, and the head coaches drive that process for the federation anyway. So that's been good in that respect. Obviously, COVID has impacted hugely, you know.
Yeah, but so they have. So once you got the position, they already had a head coach, and there was no head coach when you.
No. So FIFA sort of encourage and advise, you know, to nominate senior coaches for like a cycle, really, for a 4-year cycle from World Cup to World Cup. And that was one of our main priorities when I came into the role, is, you know, for us to get senior coaches on board, which we've done in the men's and seniors. The next stage of us will be the youth sections as well, because we've got a whole big scouting and recruitment strategy going on at the moment. And that's resulting in some good success as well. So, yeah.
So a few years ago, I had watched, I'd actually watched it on DVD. I'd found it at one of my local libraries. It was a movie called Next Goal Wins, which was based on American Samoa. Obviously, I'm not really too familiar with Samoa or Western Samoa or American Samoa, or that the islands within that region. So forgive me if I'm mixed everything together. But from watching that movie, it was these regional tournaments. So a lot of these island nations would play in tournaments similar to what I would probably see in the US, where it'd be several fields at one location and it would be not necessarily a spectator event. But is this some, are there some comparisons to that movie?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'll probably say it's like a smaller version of the Dallas Cup, you know, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners, and I've been there a few times as well. So it's just, yeah, usually it's one venue, two fields. And around the American Samoa, so the American Samoa, Tonga, Samoa and Cook Islands, based upon rankings of the, so they're probably the lowest four countries in the 11 countries within the Oceania region. And it is, you know, the interesting thing is a lot of these teams, because they don't play regularly and they don't even get together regularly. So a lot of the islands will get together. It's changing now, but just recently, actually, but a lot of them will just get together, you know, 4 weeks out from a tournament. And, you know, they're cobbled together a team and go out and try and prepare. And it's a challenge, you know. But yeah, I watched that movie and there's some big comparisons. I mean, we, in 2017, I was with the Cook Islands under 20s. And just as, you know, supporting the coach at the time. And we turned up to the tournament, 14 players. That's all we could get. We managed to pick, because we just didn't have any time. One player was a goalkeeper. So, you know, he's 13. And then of that 13, number 13 was told us he was just recovering from an ACL injury. We had no idea about, no one had told us. So really got 12. And then you're about to play New Zealand under 20s. And New Zealand are like the powerhouse for this region. So we actually performed well in the end. We didn't have much of the ball, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, it was just, it's just changing their sort of routines and habits, because they're just not used to that level of international football, because they're going from playing localized village football, maybe, you know, some of these countries 4 months of the year. And then they're going into, you know, a high level international qualifying tournament for an under 20 World Cup. So yeah, it's a big, big challenge, but it can be enjoyable as well at the same time, you know?
I could imagine, even on a lesser scale with my own coaching, that trying to get more out of that top player, where he might be leaps and bounds above everyone else and he just doesn't quite necessarily get it, that he goes, well, this works for me. That is something that trying to get that your best player to even raise the bar, because you know what the competition is going to be. I could imagine that is a challenge. So then when you, I guess, come up with a presentation of what you really trying to say, what you want to provide to the nation, does playing, say, defensively, or does that strategy like come into play?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you have to do quite a lot of research, you know, and I've been in this region now for best part of 10 years on and off and moving around a bit. But so I like to think I've got a solid grasp on all the countries and their, you know, the level of football development. But it's quite good in a sense of, because they are so limited in terms of their level and exposure internationally, you are really starting at ground zero in terms of the actual foundation of the game. So the actual teams as well that you're looking to set up, it is, like you say, you know, it's starting as rigid, defensive, structured as you can be, because if you don't, then, you know, you will get exposed against some of these other well-developed teams like New Zealand, Tahiti, Fiji, Solomon Islands, you know, those countries.
And then during the COVID period, I know we've on and off been like communicating through Messenger and Twitter, and you're based in New Zealand, so you're working remotely, but in a different time zone. Is that correct?
Well, I'm really fortunate, actually, because the Samoa time zone is exactly the same as New Zealand. So it wouldn't be that enjoyable if it was sort of 6 hours ahead, I guess, because I'd be getting up quite in the early hours. So that's worked out really, really well. It's just in terms of travel restrictions. I've been there, obviously, a couple of times before in tournaments as well. And so, I've seen the environment. I've seen the where they work out of, but yeah, it's just COVID, unfortunately, has impacted this region quite badly.
Yeah, I could imagine. So how have you, being at home, how have you been able to work as a technical director remotely? What are some of, obviously, we all know what the challenges would be, but what are some of the ways that you've engaged with the players and the nation?
So Zoom has obviously been Microsoft Teams, but we've actually done well in a sense of, as a federation, you know, I have a lot of meetings a week, you know, a lot of meetings, not just with my own staff, but also with Oceania Football, with FIFA and different people. And so it's enabled us to really get a good footing in terms of where we're at as a federation country of development in terms of our compliance, our programs, how they're set up strategically, not just this year, next year and beyond. So the good thing is like the Oceania Football Confederation, their office is in Auckland, and that is who we directly communicate with across the board on every area of football development. So you know, I've got good relationships with those people. I'm able to go in, see them, and so we've, you know, we've actually done quite well. I like to think we've done quite well. We've appointed a number of staff, you know, like a futsal development manager, a goalkeeping development officer. These are roles that never existed before. So until I'm able to get actually on the ground, then I'm doing all the back stuff, I guess, the not so enjoyable stuff, but I actually enjoy, which enables the staff on the ground to actually deliver all the activities.
So then what is the next tournament or the next thing that you're preparing for?
So for us, it would be the Women's Nations Cup. So New Zealand qualified because they're home Australia 2023. So it would be us making sure that our women's team is prepared for that in July, as well as our under-19s men. The unfortunate thing is that we're not able to get into Samoa at the moment. No one's actually able to get out of Samoa. And we've got players that are in multiple regions around the world, New Zealand, Australia. No one from Australia can get into New Zealand and vice versa, US, Hawaii. So it makes it a bit of a challenge. But, you know, a lot of other member associations are in the same position. So it's not just us. You've just got to be as creative as you can and just, you know, do the best that you can, really, and just adapt and move as it all flows, really.
So then you have college, or you have players playing, Samoan players in the US?
Yep, in some colleges in the US. So, and we're always looking for more, and we're finding more weekly as well. So if there is anyone listening who's, you know, got players within the college market, get in touch, because, you know, they fit a really strong profile for us. Hawaii as well has always been a bit of a hotbed for us. Australia, New Zealand, and obviously Samoa is where domestically the majority of the players will come from.
So will you then be, will you, when it comes to like picking these national teams or selection, are you involved in that? Is that entirely up to the head coach of the team?
Yeah, that will be with the head coaches, and that we directly with them. So what we've done is we've gone really broad. And we've selected a massive overall database, and then we'll start to deselect from there. But yeah, I mean, that's down to them. We've got some ID games coming up as well in New Zealand, which will just give the coaches the opportunity to see domestically the players within New Zealand. But it's difficult. I'm not going to lie. It's a big challenge. And we were due to play in Qatar and the World Cup qualifiers for our men in March, but you know, we had to pull out in the end because there's some real big challenges in the sense of, obviously Samoa I've already mentioned, but in New Zealand currently, if you left, you actually can't get back into the country. So it's, yeah, we could probably leave to go to Qatar, but it's like we'd never know when we were coming back. So yeah. Challenge.
I can imagine that. It's just such a strange and unique situation that you're in. So apart from the obvious COVID issues that you've mentioned, what have been some of the other challenges that you've had to overcome in the role?
It's really just making sure we're aligned with everything. And the staff are fantastic. You know, they have been fully engaged from the moment I came into the role, really respectful, and are very passionate about developing the game in their country. Because again, you know, I'll be in the role for a period of time, no doubt. So you just want to make sure it's in a, you know, a good firm space. But no, the staff have driven things on the ground, whereas I've tried to drive things from, you know, outwardly in, if you like. But yeah, it's not been easy. I'm not going to lie. It's not been easy.
So then,
hopefully, all being well, we'll have this.
So for 2022, then, what is your, assuming that you can step foot on the soil and you can get your players together and you can be actively running things, what are you expecting to achieve in 2022 or into 2023?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a big operational plan we want to activate. We've got, for me, some of the key areas will be not just the national teams, we're talking the younger national teams as well, like our 17s and 19s. But coach education is going to be a big driver for us because it's an area that hasn't really been developed before. And, you know, as you know, if you've got more qualified coaches on the ground, driving the game, the grassroots up to the senior level, ultimately that's going to benefit our national teams as well. So that will be an area, but across the board, really, you know, new initiatives, futsal, beach soccer, goalkeeping, which I've already mentioned. Women's football, because we've got the Women's World Cup here in 2023. So we want to really drive that forward as much as possible. So, yeah, just across the board, mass development.
Well, Jess, it's been... I probably could ask you 1,000 questions of so many different things, but it has been a really interesting story to hear from an old MLS camps coach that has, you know, progressed and to and just learning about, you know, your role as a technical director. Jess, again, thank you for your time, and I wish you and Samora all the best for 2022 and the upcoming Women's World Cup qualifiers.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Again, thanks for the opportunity, and I look forward to listening to future podcasts.
Thank you for listening to the PK Soccer Podcast. Don't forget that you can follow me on Twitter at Paul Kelshaw, Instagram at Paul Kelshaw, like my Facebook page at PK Soccer Inc., or send an email paulkelshaw@pksoccer.org. I would also be grateful if you could give the podcast a review and a rating and share with your fellow coaches and friends. Thanks for listening. Goodbye. We'll be right back.